My guest is Paul Von Ward, best known to our audience for his research into reincarnation, but who's here tonight talking about 2012 myths. And a couple of the ones we haven't touched on yet coming up are ones designed to stimulate conversation. The idea that the U.S. is an exception, that we Americans are somehow exceptional, and also into discussion of military dominance, whether that guarantees peace. I'll get into those, and then we'll open up the phone lines with your questions right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Von Ward, one of the other things that you label as a 2012 myth is the idea that the United States is an exception. American exceptionalism is a topic we've heard a lot about. It's a very emotional topic. I love my country and think of it as in many ways, a beacon of light to the rest of the world. We've done a lot of good stuff in helping the rest of the world. You think that we're being led down a path by relying on this belief a little too much?
Yes, and I think the point to be made here is that all of these myths that I've been talking about with you, it's a question of balance. Obviously, the United States was founded on the notion that we were a different kind of society, a different kind of government, and we offered it to the world. And we had this model that I think has contributed significantly to world history. But when you carry it to the extreme, which we've done in terms of our religious beliefs, that we are the chosen people, that somehow the universe's God has chosen our particular little group of humans on this particular planet, to be an exception from all the other laws of our universe. And what that's doing at this point in time is we have politicians saying we're number one in health care. Well, we're not number one in health care. We're way down the list, but we're spending more money on it than any other nation. We're the best in terms of education, and of course now we know that we are way down the list in terms of other societies, in terms of science and math and history and the other disciplines that we must be very sharp in if we're going to stay a vibrant society. And on, you can list these sorts of things. And what I'm trying to do with this particular myth is to say to ourselves, look, we have accomplished something that the world has never seen before in this society. But if we stay in the same rut, if we do not assess our history and the impact of what we're now doing for the future, we will no longer have that role. And so that's what I'm trying to urge us to think about, how to find that balance that we have lost over the last several decades.
It does strike you as a lot of people who want to believe that we are exceptional, and I think there's a lot of evidence for that, but who still see us as at the top of the heap in so many regards that we clearly are not tops in anymore, really don't want to pay for anything that would keep us up there, education being an example. It doesn't seem like Americans want to pay for anything. I know we're in some tough economic straits right now. In terms of budgets and things of that sort, but it doesn't seem like we want to invest in the kinds of things that made us great to begin with.
We've lost the sense of community. In other words, we have become so individually oriented, looking out for our own self. And, we support that by saying, well, this is an individualistic society. This is the frontier society. We always have believed on this motto, of the independent free man taking care of himself and so on. But what we really know about the world is that the most successful societies are societies based on community, healthy communities where you have a balance of roles, balance of wealth, balance of resources and so on. So that's the only point I'm trying to make here, that let's wake up ourselves before it's too late to lose the momentum that we've had in history.
One of your myths about individuals can succeed by themselves sort of flows from that. I mean, individuals have done remarkable things in this country, and an individual can make a major difference in the whole world. And And to a large extent, the U.S., America has encouraged that kind of that thinking, and it's been proven to be true in a lot of ways. You just think it goes too far.
Yeah, we have lost the understanding that individuals who do things that are exceptional are dependent on the culture in which they have grown up, and they are able to function as they are because of the infrastructure, because of the contributions of other people in supporting the development of their invention. You know, Steve Jobs is a perfect example. You know, a wonderful gift of individualism, but it could not have been accomplished without the support troops that he had around him and the financial structure in this country, commercial institutions that we have, the desire of people all around the world to take advantage of those inventions. So it's the holistic concept that I'm trying to say that we really need to take a new look at in this particular time of hardship in our society.
Meaning things like schools, roads, highways, things that we all contribute to that make the success of somebody like Steve Jobs possible.
That's exactly right. We have to have a focus on this balance of institutions and individualism. And I use the word community, and that if we start this reform in our own communities to bring back this sense of working together, as we do this from community to community, then this is the way to work ourselves out of the hole that we're in at the moment.
Another hot button, what you call a myth, is that military dominance guarantees peace. Of course, this is a hot issue right now. President Obama announced recently $500 billion cut in the defense budget, and that's caused a lot of hand-wringing and wailing and moaning that, oh my gosh, that's putting us in danger from various enemies, real or perceived.
Well, what the reality of the situation is that we have created bloated institutions of defense in this country. Having been in that military environment, I certainly know how it works. We have learned to spend more and more money supporting not our soldiers on the ground or the sailors in the sea, but supporting then the industrial complex that supports it. For us to put one boot on the ground, if you want to use that term, we have this extensive support structure of all the corporations, all of the support functions that we have created, not necessarily to make that boot on the ground being the most powerful and effective force on the planet. It's really weakened by the way we have sapped the rest of our society with these bloated budgets. And this is the notion, you see, that we don't want to give up our idea that we've got to defend ourselves and that we have the best military on the planet. Certainly we do, but we are paying for it hundreds of times what we ought to be spending on what we really need. And we also have to look at the notion of, is this dominant force bringing peace and security to ourselves? Obviously not. We are attacked and we have enemies popping up everywhere because we are forcing ourselves on the planet in every part of the world. I mean, we have our resources and our presence in every part of the planet, and that is not necessary to maintain our own security as a nation. And we've got to just get real about this and look at things more realistically than we are at the moment.
Personally, I'm less concerned about the dollar amounts. I think the defense budget could be cut and we're not going to suffer a whole lot in terms of our national security. I'm more concerned about all that spending and all the influence that the military-industrial complex has, how pervasive their influence is, how much of a threat they represent to our personal freedoms. And sometimes it seems like we just welcome those kind of changes, incremental though they may be, one little step at a time, and we do so willingly.
Well, the whole notion that our military now is expanded its function back into our domestic society. And that was one of the cherished traditions of America, is that our military was to defend us abroad. And now, in this false sense of an entire global war on terrorism, we have then diminished our own freedoms and our own abilities to have a civil society in our own culture. And this is really an example of how those who benefit most from the expenditures of a government budget want to cut other parts of the government's budget, but not those that support this superstructure of military defense, security, war on terrorism, which is an inappropriate approach to the challenges that we have in the world today. All the years I've spent overseas and in other countries, it is very clear to me that we are doing more harm for ourselves than we're doing good, and we need to rethink this. And I think 2012 is a year to look at all of these myths and re-examine our own thinking, because
Again, on the military point, not to beat a dead horse, but you look at the changes that we have willingly accepted, a little tiny bit at a time. The changes to fundamental constitutional rights, warrantless searches and seizures, the ability to wiretap, listen into phone calls, and we don't seem to mind it as much anymore. The indefinite detention, imprisonment of people without even charges, and we've gone along with it.
Well, we've gone along with it because we have been frightened and let ourselves be frightened by the way we have described these terrorist events. Living and working in Europe in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, they went through a period of terrorism that was essentially the same sort of experiences that the United States has had, and they tackled it in a totally different way, and in a civil police fashion, which is what is appropriate for these small groups of individuals who are desiring to wreak havoc in societies. The kind of military we have is for fighting wars of the size of World War II and other such global experiences. And we have used the wrong model in terms of responding to terrorism. And that's a whole other debate, but I think that's one that we really have got to look at in this time of tight resources and sorting ourselves out.
I have some other questions, but I promised we'd get to some phone calls. Sean in Toronto on the wildcard line. Good morning, Sean. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? What's on your mind?
Quite a bit on my mind, George, but thanks for taking my call, first of all.
Sure.
I'm a first-time caller, and I'm glad I got on tonight. Anyways, I just have a couple comments that I'd like to make, which would be a question in the end to ask your guest's opinion. Is it Paul, is his name?
Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, okay. So based on what I've heard him speaking about so far tonight, it's got me thinking about this. I think the capitalist system, how we live our lives here in the West, is fundamentally flawed in a really serious way that must be addressed, or its inevitable conclusion is going to be the end of our world, at least environmentally, if not spiritually. But my other comments in regards to that are like the fact that things, this is to do with the capital system as well. Our energy system, our antiquated fossil fuel energy system, I don't know about you, George, but I believe that the technology exists for it to be replaced and that it's being kept secret by huge cabals, I guess, people that have been around for decades that have a massive interest in keeping that from us. The pharmaceutical industry, medical industry, they're ruled by a search for dollars. That twists them. It ruins the altruism. Do you know what I'm getting at?
I think so, Sean. And I'll tell you, we're going to a break in about 2 minutes, so I want to give him, give Paul a chance to weigh in on what you've said so far.
Well, I would just like to say that I agree with the concept that has been described. I think that is the symptom of this overweening individualism and the accruing of all of the financial wealth one can develop for oneself or one's own little group. We've just gotten this all out of whack. We have gone back to the time of the medieval and feudal lords who concentrated all of the wealth of the community among themselves. So it's not capitalism per se. It is the abuse of those capitalistic concepts for individual and small group gain rather than it being spread equitably throughout society as people develop their own industry and their own businesses on a small scale. That was our tradition in the past.
Yeah, I mean, making money has sure led to a lot of good innovations and steps forward. It's not inherently bad. In fact, it's probably a pretty good thing. I guess to some extent, you can overdo it. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. We've got to rein in our ego and our individuality and our selfishness, which is exactly what's happening on Wall Street and in the corporate boardrooms around the world.
Sean, I appreciate the call. A couple of other folks on the line, but we're going to be going to a break here in just a moment. I guess, Paul, one of the things that occurs to me, you say at the end of your predictions that it's important for us to shun magical thinking in 2012, and yet I can imagine your primary area of expertise in the study of reincarnation. There's a heck of a lot of people, scientists, skeptics, who would say that, in fact, is magical thinking.
That's exactly right. And the battle that we're fighting in this research is to get people to look at the actual evidence that exists to suggest that consciousness is something that survives our physical death. And there's so much evidence to suggest that there are influences from past lives on the present lives, but people want to dismiss it. And what we've been doing is trying to develop physical evidence, behavioral evidence, and so on. People just don't want to take the time to look at evidence. They really want to have an easy answer in all of these areas that we've been talking about.
Paul Von Ward is my guest. We're taking a break. Chambers Brothers taking us into that break with a classic, Time Has Come Today, from way back in 1968. Thanks, Sean, for that call. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Von Ward is my guest. You know him best for his research into reincarnation. But tonight he's talking about myths of 2012. Some of this pretty tough to take. I think pretty much a challenge to firmly held beliefs. And these are definitely hot button issues. But of course, on Coast to Coast, we do look at all sides of different issues. And that's what we're doing tonight. One of the predictions we haven't touched on is something that Paul describes as fundamentalists in science, who are every bit as religious as what we would describe as mainstream religion. We'll get into that and get to more of your questions in our final segment tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Von Ward, your final prediction, we haven't touched on this, but it's one that we've discussed a lot of times on Coast to Coast. It deals with scientists, skeptics, and we've seen it in UFO research, probably in reincarnation research that you're familiar with. how people purport to be scientists but act in a very unscientific way when new paradigms, new theories challenge their fundamental beliefs.
This is exactly the right way to describe it, because what happened or what has happened over time is that science has been more or less dominated by the financial pressures that are involved in terms of research. We need a lot of money to use the technologies that we have developed in this modern era. We have people in educational and research organizations that require an awful lot of financial support. And so what we have now is the same problem in science that we have in politics and other issues. The financial elites are the ones who determine what we focus our scientific talent on. And the earlier caller talked about the pharmaceutical area. That is a perfect example where people who do research and health and pharmaceutical discoveries are dependent on these sources of funds. So we have a bias in the whole scientific community at this point in time. That's the major problem, is the financial support. You don't have very many independent scholars anymore, like James Lovelock, who gave us the Gaia hypothesis about the Earth. We don't have people like that much anymore. I mean, even our little experiment, we're doing it without funds, very little support from very few people in the reincarnation experiment. And so no big institution is willing to support this kind of research, because it would change the whole way we think about humans and our development and our education and how our consciousness is evolving. And I have to say it, I think that it is consciousness itself that is being manipulated by the ruling institutions at this point. That's why we have these myths that we've been talking about today, because these myths are perpetrated and reinforced by the mainstream media. And so we're locked into that sort of vicious cycle at this point.
Yeah, there's a saying that I think Whitley Strieber is the one who wrote it the first time I saw it, and I've used it many times. It's the duty of science to investigate the unexplained, not to explain the unexplained. And we see it in so many areas where scientists who supposedly should be willing to look at evidence, follow the evidence where it leads, don't even want to hear it. When it's something outside their paradigm, outside their box, they don't even want to look at it, and they find ways to ignore evidence or new findings or new theories.
Yeah, we have that experience every day as we try to do our research. But, you know, this is also a part of this immature, controlled way of thinking that we have developed in our country. We don't have institutions supporting experimentation and innovation. Institutions are now working, and this is true in religion and science and the military and corporations. We've got to protect where we are, and we don't want to expose any flaws in our thinking and our assumptions. We don't want to look at the implications of the way we are managing our lives and our society. And that's why I'm using these sort of pithy myths that I think cause us to stop and reflect a little bit on these main issues that are facing us at this point in time.
West of the Rockies, Jeff in Culver City, California, been holding a long time. Thanks for being patient, Jeff. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, George and Mr. Von Ward. Yes, it's been said, what is more frightening, to know that we are all alone in the universe or that there are other life forms out there? I believe that it's more frightening to know that we are all alone, and to see how we act towards each other now is unbelievable. But, and this leads me to this question, Mr. Von Ward. If the world doesn't end in 2012 on that date, December 21st, then how will the bad and the evil and the wicked be punished? And if there is no punishment, what's the point of believing in religion to say that there will be? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Thanks. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks very much, Jeff, for that question. I think the issue here that Jeff is making or pointing to is our belief system that it's external forces that will punish us. Our supernatural religions of today are built on the notion of a punishing God who will take care of all of those who break his rules. What we don't understand is that the universe that we're in is one that operates by its own inherent rules of whatever the source or creator is of this universe. And it's not something external that's going to be meted out to us to punish us for our behaviors. We are going to experience the consequences ourselves on this planet Earth. So we are responsible for what's going to happen to us after 2012 because of the decisions that we as humans individually and collectively make about how we live our lives on this planet Earth. And just as we are not looking for an external punishment, neither are we looking for an external bailout. So we're going to have to live with the consequences of the way we live our lives on this planet after 2012. And I will be happy to speak with anyone who wants to discuss that in 2013 and beyond.
Meaning we don't have to necessarily have Judgment Day on December 21st, that we would all have our own, have to face consequences of the lives we've led and the choices we make. In your realm, in the realm of karma and reincarnation, and how those kinds of how it comes back on us maybe quicker than we think, but not necessarily in one single judgment day for everyone.
No, that's exactly the perspective that I'm operating from.
First time caller, Steve in Tennessee. Good morning, Steve. Hi, Steve. You there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. How you doing?
All right, I'm pretty good. I kind of tuned into your show late. I've got a few comments and maybe some statements here. I didn't become aware of the 2012 thing until 2004. And what popped up into my mind was when the Y2K scare was going around, people were coming out saying that we added the zero year into the calendar. So right now it's 2011, but it's actually 2010. And I kind of had that backed up when I may have the date wrong. In the middle part or last part of 2010, when the sun was emitting some mild solar flares and causing the northern lights to reach all the way up to, I believe it was Washington, NASA came out and said that they were wrong about their predictions in 2012, December the 21st. They said that it's going to be December the 21st, 2013, when the sun reaches at maximum solar flare peak. But the one thing, I'm kind of computer illiterate, I don't have a computer. The one thing that I couldn't find and get my friends to find was, are they wrong also about the planets lining up in 2012? Will that also be 2013? And then the statement I'd like to make is, nobody really seems to realize how powerful Satan is. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but if you look at the Mayan and how they got all their knowledge of the solar system and how the solar system worked and the rotation of the planets, you got to remember that Satan was created. He wasn't created as Satan. He was an angel, but he was there to see how the whole universe was put together. And when, of course, he left the heavenly organization and he got down here, his main goal is to rule or ruin. I mean, you can kind of look at that if you look at Germany during World War II. If you look at them, I mean, even scientists will tell you how far we started out in the 1900s, started out on horse and carriages, and look how far we've progressed. And I believe that's because of Revelations 12:9, when Satan was cast down to the earth. He can no longer enter space or heaven no more. But if you look in the book of Job, it talks about how Satan entered in among the assembly of God, and God asked him, where have you been? He said, rovering the earth and walking about upon it. And that's when he put the challenge towards Job. Well, after that, so Satan could influence things in heaven. After that, Satan was cast down to earth. cleansed, Satan was cast down, and he's stuck here now, knowing he has a short period of time. And his main job is to rule or ruin. And that's why you see, I mean, if you look at all of our advances, they haven't helped us. They're just putting us further behind, creating more pollution, destroying the earth. And I remember George earlier made a comment about how some people believe that God's just sitting back waiting for us to ruin the earth. He's not. He says in the Bible that he's going to bring to ruin those ruining the earth.
I'll tell you what, Steve, hold on. I just want to kind of zero in on where you're heading here, because there's other folks hanging on to the phone lines want to get in. So why don't you get to the point, and we'll see what Paul has to say. You've given us a lot to chew on here already.
Well, just more or less, does he believe that the planets, because I can't find nothing from NASA, are the planets going to be aligning up in 2012, or is it going to be 2013?
Paul, does the date, Paul, you sort of addressed some of that. I don't think Steve was able to hear it, but you, as far as you're concerned, I'm guessing that the date doesn't really matter.
No, and the date is a totally artificial construct. The Mayan prophecies, the Mayan calendar was created before we've changed the calendar several times in the last several hundred years. So this fixation on a particular date according to our personal present calendar is irrelevant. We have to look at the long wave shifts that are underway, and that's what the focus should be on. But I would like to just say that I think Steve, in his good intentions, nevertheless reflects what we talked about earlier on in the show of magical thinking. And all of the implications that he was making is that these external beings, which we have as humans created by misinterpreting the ancient text, and then we are saying and hoping that these external beings, whether it's a negative Satan or a positive God, are going to solve our problems or punish us one way or the other. And, of course, the whole conversation on the program tonight is that this is not the way the universe works.
Well, what about the concept of Satan itself, evil being personified? Where are you on that?
Well, everything else is on a scale, a balancing scale. We have used the word Satan to talk about anything that is destructive, and we talk about God as anything that is constructive. But we'd have to go into a long history of how this experience that humans had, that I wrote about in God's Genes and Consciousness, and We've Never Been Alone, where we took the experiences of intervention by more advanced beings, and they were involved in having an impact on human development for thousands and thousands of years, if not longer. And what we've done is we've taken some of those beings who were seen by humans as having a destructive effect versus a positive effect, and we've given them these labels, and then we have deified them to some ephemeral level of reality that then act upon us through this this magical method that Steve is talking about, that this energy force, this being, which was just, it's a human construct based on actual experiences with advanced beings in history.
Steve, appreciate the call, and you gave us a lot to chew on there. I'll try to get one more call in. Sabrina in Washington. Hi, Sabrina.
Yes, I'm here.
We need to get right to it. We're running out of time, so what's on your mind?
Yes. You were talking about magical thinking, and I'm a witch, and when I use magical thinking, I can actually get things done, as long as I'm not in my own way, which often is the case.
Well, Paul, what do you think about the power of positive thinking? Is that another way to talk about it? Can we create our own realities?
Well, we can have an influence on our reality. Not by magical thinking, but what we actually do with our focus and in our energies that we do interact with other people with, there are connections among all of us. Physics today has a wonderful concept of entanglement that operates at the quantum level of physics. We're talking about a universe in which all of us are interconnected and we are mutually influencing each other, and consequently we affect the course of our behaviors and what happens around us, whether it's having to do with health or in terms of interactions with other people, bringing people together to affect a particular outcome. These things happen. But we have to be very careful about this magical thinking. We are not as powerful individually as we think we are. The New Age concept of just thinking it and wishing it and it will happen, it will only happen if it is in the context of a group. It is
Paul, I'm on that note, I'm going to have to stop. Thanks for giving us a lot to think about. Paul Von Ward, thanks for being on the program. Also to John and Victoria Alexander. My thanks to David and Gina and Tim there at Premier. And I will be back next Sunday night, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Coast to Coast AM.